I'm Amber Tresca, and this is About IBD. I'm a medical writer and patient educator who lives with a J-pouch due to ulcerative colitis. It's my mission to educate people living with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis about their disease and to bring awareness to the patient journey. Welcome to episode 150. My guest is Abrie Bernstein. Abrie is currently receiving her master's and is in training to become a somatic psychotherapist. Abrie shares her journey with IBD and somatic psychotherapy and how she noticed improvements in symptoms and disease activity after working with a somatic coach and therapist. We talk about how healing from chronic illness, trauma, and stress involves learning self-compassion and reconnecting with the body through embodied practices, which may in turn lead to a more flexible nervous system and improved overall well-being. Listeners who live with an IBD or other chronic illness may identify closely with the experiences we discuss and how they could lead to a trauma response. For that reason, I encourage you to listen when you're feeling well enough to do so. We are all on a lifelong journey towards healing, and I think this discussion will offer you some helpful guidance and validation as you work towards that goal. Abrie, thank you so much for coming on About IBD.
So good to be here.
So first things first, I'm going to ask you to briefly introduce yourself to our listeners.
Thank you so much for having me. Hi, everyone. My name is Abrie Bernstein. I'm a somatic psychotherapist in training, and I own a peer somatic coaching business called Healing with Abrie, and I live with ulcerative colitis in New York City.
Right. Abrie, because we do a little bit of talking before we jump on and start recording, you've told me a little bit about your journey with ulcerative colitis. So I wonder if you would talk about how and when you were first diagnosed.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, or UC, when I was a senior in high school. I was hospitalized on and off for the next year and navigated flare-ups and the horrible effects of side effects of steroids for the next 6 years. Before my official diagnosis, I was in an intense flare. I was going to the bathroom about 18 to 24 times a day, and there was a lot of rectal bleeding. I remember being on the field hockey team, and I would run off the field multiple times during a game. I guess I was determined to keep playing. I was trying to get through school, have a social life, and I was also diagnosed with celiac disease during that time as well. So I had to change my diet. I remember feeling really alone during that time, and I was incredibly stressed about getting into college. And I was hospitalized the week leading up to my high school graduation, and I didn't know if I was going to make it to my high school graduation ceremony. Thankfully, I was released from the hospital right before, and so I was able to make it to the ceremony. And during that time and in the years to follow, I was just so desperate for a solution. And really, I just wanted the disease to go away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for sharing that with me. I know a lot of people with IBD will identify very deeply with the symptoms that you described. I personally identify with it. I did not play field hockey, but the 18 to 24 times a day while in high school is not a fun time, not knowing if you're going to be able to go to your prom and all of that and your graduation ceremony. That's really rough. I 100% identify it. I actually refused to go into the hospital during my senior years. Mm. Probably not a great choice, but that was the one that I made. So that is totally understandable and why we're here today as to how it fed into your decision to become a coach for people living with chronic illness and to study psychotherapy. But let me know how you got started on that path.
Yeah, well, there was definitely a winding road. Mm-hmm. So after college, I had a few really intense social justice-oriented jobs. They were meaningful, and I enjoyed parts of them, but they were also really stressful. And I began noticing that my body and my UC was having a really, really strong negative reaction to my work experience and just my lifestyle. And so I started to realize that my body was constantly trying to communicate with me, sending me cues of safety or danger. And my UC would flare when I didn't feel safe or I was stressed and moving too fast. Mm-hmm. And I also noticed that when I calmed down and I moved slower, which seems you know, intuitive, my symptoms would soften. And I was just so angry with my body in my early 20s because I felt like it had betrayed me and it made my life so challenging. And I remember I used to use the word normal a lot. And I felt like living with ulcerative colitis put me outside of the normal human experience. Like everyone was inside something that I was outside of. And I had so many extensive needs. I was really sensitive to food, people, experiences. And I just felt so much shame for really being different and felt like I didn't belong. And especially when I was a teen and I was in college, there were so many parts of the college experience that were really inevitable, right? Like that made me sick, like the food, the drinking, staying out late, et cetera. I didn't have a choice in a lot of these things. And so I, especially for young people living with IBD, I just want to send out compassion because there's so much out of our control. And it really requires us, if we are able to be gentle with ourselves. When I was sick and I was in a flare-up, I felt this urgency, which I mentioned before, to fix myself. And so I went from this doctor to that doctor, this diet to that diet. And I felt like I was an immense burden on the people around me. And underneath all of that, I really just felt this deep shame that something was wrong with me and that a doctor or someone else would fix me. And so after trying every medication available, I was still sick and the physicians just couldn't figure out why. And so it took years and a lot of somatic therapy and coaching to realize that my body was actually trying to protect me and lead me towards people and experiences that were right for me and away from those that weren't working. And I started realizing that my body was actually the barometer and intuition for what worked and what didn't. And when I was sick and I hadn't done this work, I didn't have the capacity to be curious about my internal experience. And so it was really from a place of hopelessness and being really sick that I started to look inward. And I began my own journey of somatic psychotherapy, mindfulness practices, and ultimately remembering that nothing was wrong with me and that my body was actually my truest source of wisdom. And my life wasn't working. It wasn't aligned with what I needed. And so after beginning to work with a somatic coach and therapist, I began noticing an immense shift and reduction of symptoms and disease activity. I really want to highlight and mention that I'm still on medication. I don't know what my future holds, but I believe that everyone is different. And it's really important to work with your medical team and check in with yourself to figure out what the best treatment plan is for you. I personally believe that medication can be really helpful. And in my experience, when my body is in a stress response, I still experience symptoms even with the medication. And I know a lot of other people that also are still pretty sick with medication. And so learning how to regulate my nervous system has enabled my body with the conditions for the medication and other ancillary supports like supplements and acupuncture and other support systems to work. And lastly, what really brought me here is when I was younger, I'd always dreamed of being a therapist. I remember when I watched Meet the Fockers, Barbara Streisand played the sex therapist. I loved her character and I so wanted to have that job. And so after having such a transformative experience with somatic therapy myself, I just felt like it was a natural step to pursue my license.
Thank you for sharing all of that with me. So I'm nodding along, which listeners can't see because this is a podcast, because I'm identifying with what you're saying. But even so, the idea of somatic psychotherapy is a new one on me. And so I'm coming at this from also a place of curiosity, and I'm sure that listeners are as well. So I wonder if you would explain a little bit about somatic psychotherapy. And then also what the process of being in that type of therapy looks like for patients.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you asking. It's a really good question. And also just want to acknowledge I had no idea what any of this was either. And it wasn't until
makes me feel better.
Like really nothing. Yeah, no doctor told me. I didn't know anything. And it wasn't until I started listening and reading and identifying really with what people were saying about it and the fact that I was so not in my body that that I it really started resonating. And thankfully, it really has changed my life. So essentially, somatic psychotherapy is an umbrella term for a multitude of therapeutic modalities that are all centered around healing through the body and nervous system regulation. Mm-hmm. So somatic therapy is especially helpful for those living with chronic illnesses, chronic pain, chronic stress, PTSD, and complex PTSD. Mm-hmm. Some of these modalities include, but are not limited to, somatic experiencing, sensory motor psychotherapy, somatic internal family systems, Gestalt, Hakomi, and EMDR. And so in my work, I draw from somatic experiencing, somatic internal family systems, acceptance and commitment therapy, as well as polyvagal theory. Mm-hmm. Before diving into what it looks like for clients, I want to highlight two things. So one, I'm sure that people listening to this are potentially sick mm-hmm. and are open to trying anything to feel better. So I just want you to know I'm so grateful that you're listening. And I'm also really sorry you're not feeling well. I see you. I've been in that rush to recover, and it makes so much sense why you'd want to feel better right now. Mm-hmm. You deserve to feel better. Something that I've noticed from my own experience in working with clients is that there's this underlying feeling of shame that I caused this disease. And if only I didn't eat that, or if I didn't get stressed about this or that, or fill in the blank, mm-hmm. if I didn't do this, mm-hmm. I would feel better right now. So there's this underlying feeling that this is my fault and I'm controlling this. And there's also an urgency that accompanies feeling unwell. So there's this, like, I need to feel better right now and do everything I can to feel better. There can often be complications with flare-ups in IBD, and many patients go into fight or flight mode when there are early symptoms of a flare. And again, this response makes so much sense. And it can often exacerbate symptoms and disease activity. So I say all this not to shame, to identify that this is really an appropriate response. And also there can be harm with this urgency that accompanies when people start feeling sick or start mm-hmm. getting scared about being sick. Mm-hmm. A big tenet of somatic therapy is helping clients cultivate trust with their bodies and experiences. And we really want to help clients tend to the cues and symptoms with a more restful awareness rather than jumping to fight or flight. So in other words, perhaps the body is actually trying to tell us something. Are we overwhelmed? Are we stressed? Are we all of the above? Instead of making radical life changes, because often life is stressful and overwhelming and these circumstances are out of our control, we want to ask ourselves, how can we get kinder and more curious towards our body? Really asking ourselves, what do we need? And perhaps it's really simple, like laying on the ground, drinking a cup of water, watching a show, taking just one deep breath. Somatic therapy is really developing a kinder, more curious relationship with our bodies and trusting that our bodies actually know what we need. When there's chronic urgency in our bodies, it's a sign that we're experiencing nervous system dysregulation. Often chronic stress and undiagnosed PTSD are standing in the way from us accessing these resources, and working with a practitioner can be really helpful in building that capacity and processing the stress and trauma. Mm-hmm. And so that was a lot. And the second...
It's a lot, but it's really helpful because the idea that you need to check in with your body, I don't think that's something that we potentially hear as patients. Being taught how to do that, and then also just the understanding that it's not your fault, that none of this is your fault. So, okay, I interrupted you, so go right ahead.
No, I'm so glad you said that. And also a huge piece that you're highlighting is that we in our medical system were taught that our bodies, like, something's wrong. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, we literally need to fix something. Like, we were born with something wrong. And what's fascinating about somatic therapy, in my experience, and I've now seen this with people and research is showing, it's not that our bodies are wrong. It's that we're not living a life within our capacity. Mm-hmm. Like, if there's no alignment. And mm-hmm. so, and I say this not so people get off this podcast and are like, I need to change my life.
Although right? They might. Like,
they might, but this process is supposed to be slow. Mm-hmm. And I just want to acknowledge that so much is out of our control, like so much stress and overwhelm. And so these are little things that we get to start getting curious about and make slow shifts. Mm-hmm. And I also just want to touch on, I think within IBD, there's so much restriction, diet, activity, yes. Mm-hmm. rest, except like it's exhausting. Mm-hmm. And what I love about somatic psychotherapy and just my style in general is I'm all about expanding. And so how do we give ourselves more of what we need instead of taking things away?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how do we access more of what we actually want and need and joy and rest and whatever it is slowly within what we're able to have in our lives? Again, acknowledging those limitations. Mm-hmm. The other thing I just wanted to say, again, you really said it yourself, is it's not your fault. Mm-hmm. You're not something, you're not someone to be fixed. You didn't cause this disease. And somatic therapy really is all about helping clients remember their innate worth and reconnect with their body, listening to its cues, developing a compassionate relationship with their body, and coming back again and again and again to nervous system regulation. I hear from clients, and I was this way myself, but I felt so much pressure. I thought that to be well meant that I would always be regulated. Mm. And what's been really interesting is that's not the case. To be well is to have a flexible nervous system that moves between the different states. Mm-hmm. But what's interesting is you want to be able to access those different states because they can really help and support you, especially when you do need protection and you do need to go into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. But often we're in fight or flight when we don't need to be for mm-hmm. a lot of different reasons that I can go into. And really the goal is to be able to move between them. And often with IBD patients and just people generally in chronic stress is they're stuck in a state. And that's where a lot of nervous system regulation and inflammation can come. And so in order to have a flexible and regulated nervous system that moves between these different states, which again is what we're aiming for, we need to feel safe in our own bodies. And with chronic stress, PTSD, developmental trauma, and the stress of living with chronic illness, our nervous systems are often dysregulated, which means that they're stuck in that one state and mm-hmm. we feel chronically unsafe. And what's interesting is research shows that we actually can't talk our way back to safety. Mm-hmm. It's not a cognitive or rational process. And if it was, I mean, that would be amazing.
Right.
Like talk therapy would really work for us mm-hmm. alone. Mm-hmm. Talk therapy can be helpful, but alone it often isn't enough. And so research, again, is showing that this has to be done through the body. And some of the tenets and tools in somatic therapy focus on where's this feeling that I'm not safe and okay coming from? Again, urgency is often a symptom of this. There are a multitude of practices to come back to safety in somatic coaching and therapy, such as resourcing, pendulation, diaphragmatic breathing, other vagal toning exercises, somatic internal family systems. And part of why it's really important to work with a practitioner is because when there's nervous system dysregulation, there's often trauma living in the body. And living in a trauma response takes us away from our sense of choice, calm, rest and digest, and really just being here in the present moment. And so the reason it's important to seek care from a trauma-informed practitioner with a somatic lens is because you can't do trauma healing work without somatic work. Mm. It has to be done through the body. Healing from a chronically stressed nervous system requires a somatic approach. Again, it can't be changed based on thoughts of the brain. And one of the issues in therapy right now is that and in coaching, is that many practitioners are using cognitive approaches alone when working with clients with a history of trauma and a dysregulated nervous system. And this can often result in increased shame for clients and patients because they're so frustrated that they're not able to calm down or make these changes, even though logically they know they're safe. Mm. There's like it's called a neuroceptive mismatch. And so a trauma informed somatic approach recognizes that this person's having an appropriate response to what happened to them. Mm-hmm. And the body developed these protective mechanisms of hypervigilance, urgency, etc., to support them from when they really weren't emotionally or physically safe. And through somatic coaching, we help clients access safety now. So we're retraining the body and ultimately coming back to the mind to come back to the present moment where they are safe to access a regulated nervous system. I had a wonderful professor who told me that healing from trauma is becoming who we really are. And it's really stuck with me. And it really begs the question, who would we be and what possibilities would exist if we weren't chronically in fight or flight, scarcity, and feeling unsafe all the time?
Coming up after the break, what it means to have a dysregulated nervous system. Avery, all right, we're talking a lot about dysregulation in the nervous system. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about what that means and what does that look like when your nervous system is dysregulated?
Yeah. So we all have an autonomic nervous system, or in other words, an automatic nervous system. And this is also called ANS. And it's in charge of our body's automatic functions. So ANS regulates our heartbeat, digestion, body temperature. It's like this built-in bodyguard. That's how I like to think about it. Mm-hmm. And it's always surveilling our surroundings for cues of safety and danger. And so there are three responses within polyvagal theory that our nervous system has to cues of safety and to danger. So the first is we can feel safe. So we're calm, connected, and present. The second is when there's danger or our body feels like there's perceived danger, we go into a fight or flight response. Mm-hmm. And so our heart rate and breathing increase. And for example, again, this is a bit dated, but if we're walking and we see a tiger far away enough, mm-hmm. our bodies would instinctively move away to survive. So we go into fight or flight. Immobilization or shutdown happens if we're too close to the tiger and we couldn't run. Mm-hmm. We like shut down and pretend, I don't know, we're like a rock or something and our pain-numbing endorphins are released. Mm-hmm. I'm picturing us pretending to be rocks. But what I find interesting, and this is anecdotal, is I often in my past operated in fight or flight. Mm-hmm. Like, and I noticed, I have a feeling, you see patients can relate, because I've also seen this reflected in clients, there is this sense of urgency and control. And when I look back at and through a lot of the therapy and coaching I've done, there's a reason that I am often in that response. It didn't come out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. And also, it's been really healing to get that awareness and to find ways to have a more flexible nervous system. But it's definitely a default for me, that fight or flight response. And so I'm curious, I've always been wondering about IBD patients writ large and in general, which states they fluctuate more towards. So all of this is automatic. We're not actively thinking about it. And when we have a history of trauma, often our ANS becomes dysregulated, or in other words, it becomes stuck in a nervous system state. And so we chronically feel unsafe because of what we experienced in the past. And it's hard for us to come back to a state of feeling relaxed and present. Our bodies are simply trying to keep us alive. And so we're having an appropriate response, again, to what happened to us. It's not our fault that our nervous system is stuck. I really want to highlight this, that trauma affects our bodies at a cellular level. It literally changes our brain. Bessel van der Kolk and the Trauma Foundation are doing incredible research on this, but trauma hijacks the brain. Mm-hmm. And so it really is an unconscious process. And through somatic therapy, we get to make it conscious and reprocess safety. And so it's really, I just think this field is so incredible because of the opportunity to heal and remember ultimately that we're safe. Healing from chronic illness, trauma, and stress is learning how to come back to safety in our bodies, have a flexible nervous system. And this enables us to move through the nervous system states throughout the day. It's learning how to hold compassion for ourselves, also with the responsibility to heal and grow. And we can't regulate our nervous systems through cognition, rationality, or self-hatred. Mm. A body cannot get well in a chronically stressed nervous system. When we're in a constant state of shame and self-blame, this stress intensifies despite our desperate attempts to get better. And so learning how to access regulation and minimize chronic stress through self-compassion and somatic awareness is what creates the conditions for bodies to heal. And somatic coaching and polyvagal theory helps us reconnect with our bodies, rewire our brains, and become really our own friends through these embodied practices. Mm. And again, the great news is that recovery and healing, I really believe, is possible for all of us. Mm.
I really like your example of the tiger. I know it's kind of funny because it's one that we use for a lot of different things, right? Explaining fight or flight. But if you've ever been at a zoo and heard a tiger, it really does activate something very primal in your core.
Yeah.
And you almost have no control. Okay, as an adult, you're like, I know this tiger is behind a couple of fences, usually. It's not going to come at me. But as a parent, I've been with my small children and others in a zoo, literally hearing the tiger roar. And their response is completely unfiltered. And it's terror. You know what I mean? You look at them and you can see there's abject terror. Because there is something very deep and primal about it. And as adults, we sort of process it and say, okay, we try to calm ourselves down, right? But the kids are unable to do that. So I actually think it's a really, really good example. And just for myself, from having actually witnessed people's responses to an actual tiger roar, it makes a lot of sense in that, especially for something we've never dealt with before, even as adults, rationally, we know we're safe, but that doesn't really help you to know that rationally. Totally. So
I went to a training with Bessel van der Kolk, and he said, like, we're basically paying a therapist $300 to tell you what's wrong with you and how to shift through cognition. I mean, the training, they're just such a barrier to trainings, and it's really a disservice to all of us. And so but it is really shaming. I've had really harmful experiences in therapy.
Yeah, I've heard that before. I've actually talked on this podcast with other mental health professionals about that and how that not every modality is good for every person. And, you know, for myself, for instance, trying certain things and finding them unhelpful. And then actually, sometimes this podcast is my therapy, by the way. And being told, that makes sense that that didn't work for you. And that's also okay. And so you move on to something else. So you don't have to say, well, just because this particular type of therapy, this particular therapist worked for this particular person, that's not what is necessarily going to work for you. And so letting go of that idea that this should have worked for me. Same with your physicians. You know, not every physician can work with every patient. So, So I think letting yourself also, freeing yourself a little bit from that idea as well is important in exploring this and then finding what actually is going to work for you and what actually is going to help you.
Absolutely. And this goes back to the shame that we're talking about of something's wrong with me. If this modality isn't working for me, if this practitioner isn't working for me, I'm the problem. Instead of maybe it's not a fit and maybe I need different support. Right? Like that, I think IBD patients really have been taught that something is wrong with them.
Yes.
Like if I could get anything across in this episode, I actually think people with living with IBD are so highly sensitive and attuned to what's happening in the world that I really think it can be a gift. And I just hope and want to instill this trust for patients to really trust themselves, because you're probably picking up on something. And there have been so many people and experiences that I've gaslit myself and been, you know, said, you're the problem. Keep trying. Keep this. Keep that. And I knew it was wrong. Like I knew it wasn't working for me and I knew it wasn't safe. I want patients and listeners to know, like, you know what you know.
Absolutely. And so, all right. So I'm going to circle back because There's another modality that's called acceptance and commitment therapy. And it is, I've tried to understand it. I will tell you that I've also had people on this show and then also working with other mental health care professionals in trying to understand ACT. So that's why I'm going to ask you to explain it a little bit so that we can sort of get a flavor of what this looks like and what it is.
Yeah. And just, you know, fair warning, I'm not an expert in ACT, but I do use parts of it. And I just, my practice in general, I like to take things from different theories and modalities and really meet the client where they are, because it's really all about the client. So what ACT is it's a third, it's acceptance and commitment therapy. It's a third wave derivative of CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy. And it really aims to address experiential avoidance. And what this means is that like, I didn't even understand what that meant, is efforts to control or eliminate unwanted internal experiences. And how it does this is contacting the present moment, which fosters psychological flexibility, and then increasing someone's ability to stay active and act in alignment with their personal values. And so a big tenet of acceptance and commitment therapy is mindfulness meditation. So the reason acceptance and commitment therapy is useful for IBD is research shows that ACT and specifically mindfulness exercises that are geared towards acceptance yield better results than cognitive behavioral therapy due to the nature of IBD being both chronic and unpredictable. And so the worries that people have about their disease and symptoms are often realistic. And this is a little bit what we've talked about before, like some of the worries are actually appropriate. It doesn't mean, again, that they're going to help, right, with stress reduction or actually reducing symptoms, but we can acknowledge where they're coming from. And so acceptance and commitment therapy targets the process of thinking, and it aims to increase this psychological flexibility. So it's what happens in CBT is what we do is we challenge the experience. And it just doesn't really make sense for IBD populations because we have IBD, it's chronic and it's unpredictable. Like, we can't just say, you know, this isn't going to happen, because inevitably we will have symptoms. And so it's really about fostering acceptance of the disease and moving from a place of more ease. And what I love about acceptance and commitment therapy is it feels more empowering, because it's working with reality instead of against it. When we're not fighting reality, there's some softening that comes. And the softening is a huge part also just of somatic therapy and what we're trying to do in our body, which is not constrict or move, acknowledge the constriction and move towards softening. So again, the main difference between ACT and CBT is the acceptance piece. And acceptance and commitment therapy is an active awareness of internal events without attempting to change them. In contrast, CBT aims to increase one's sense of control by challenging and changing the content of the dysfunctional thoughts. And again, if someone with IBD is scared of having symptoms, these aren't dysfunctional thoughts. These are real thoughts, like in real fears. I discuss all of this because I never learned about nervous system regulation with doctors. I never learned just what the nervous system was, period. And IBD really is so connected to nervous system dysregulation. So the main takeaway about acceptance and commitment therapy is it's this active awareness of internal events without attempting to change them, whereas CBT really aims to increase one's sense of control by challenging and changing the content of the dysfunctional thoughts. Acceptance and commitment therapy is more focused on the process and how can we just soften into what's true and really empower clients knowing what is true. How can we meet that moment? And it really reminds me a lot of the Serenity Prayer that I that's mentioned in 12-step. Mm-hmm. Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Mm-hmm. And I know this probably seems so disconnected from IBD, but I actually think control and surrender are huge parts of the experience of living with IBD. And the sense of urgency, it's so cellular and emotional that comes with IBD. And so not to shame, like to really acknowledge this is appropriate response that I'm having. And also, what do I really need right now? Like, do I need to keep controlling and pushing and trying to change this? Or can I just soften and get more curious about what's really going on and how to really tend to myself? A huge part of all of this work is, how do I become my own friend? Mm-hmm. Would a friend treat me the way that I'm treating myself right now?
Coming up next, resources where you can learn more and find support.
In talking about control, mm-hmm. I will admit to my own struggle with trying to control things.
Yeah.
And I think one of the ways that I do it, and maybe other people as well, is in trying to learn as much as humanly possible about something. It tends to make you feel like you have some control. And I think that's also why a lot of people with IBD are super interested in clinical research. They tend to mm-hmm. know a lot about the disease and other things as mm-hmm. well. So what is available on somatic therapy and the other types of therapy that you have talked about? Do you have suggestions? Where can patients learn more on their own? You know, hopefully people will be able to access a therapist and get proper care. But they can also do, I think, a little bit on their own and learn. So do you have any suggestions on where people can do that?
Absolutely. And I'm all about resources. So the show notes, is that what it's called?
Yep,
this show notes. Podcast, the show notes will be full. So, and also I'll provide my information as well. Research from the NIH and the Trauma Foundation, which again is Dr. Bessel van der Kolk's foundation, demonstrate a really strong correlation between chronic stress, trauma, PTSD, and the development of chronic inflammation and autoimmune diseases. And a history of trauma and chronic stress have a profound impact on our nervous systems and can cause our nervous systems to be dysregulated. And so I've talked about all of this a little bit. There's a great animated video that the Trauma Foundation and the Polyvagal Institute put out. And we can share them on the show notes. And it does a really great job of exemplifying this research in an audiovisual and really accessible format. There's also research out there which demonstrates how dysregulation in the autonomic nervous system from chronic stress, anxiety, depression, and PTSD co-occur with functional gastrointestinal disorders. So these studies are mostly focused on IBS, which, again, people with IBD also have IBS. There's limited research on the effect of somatic psychotherapy on IBD patients specifically, and I really do hope that this changes. Mm. At Digestive Diseases Week in 2023, which I was really lucky and grateful to attend, there was a presentation by Dr. Sock at UCLA that discussed the correlation between adverse child experiences and the development of IBS, as well as other gastrointestinal disorders. There's also really exciting clinical research with the therapeutic potential of vagus nerve stimulation via bioelectronic medicine for IBD patients. I bring this up because a large tenet of somatic work and the work that I'm doing with somatic coaching and polyvagal theory is practicing nervous system regulation through vagus nerve exercises. Polyvagal theory argues that we can regulate our own autonomic nervous systems through vagal toning. And I just want to put this into context. So when I began my journey with somatic coaching and therapy as a client, I was in a 6-month flare-up. I was on steroids and I was in so much pain. And before I started somatic therapy, I had no idea what the vagus nerve was, what the nervous system was. And I didn't know how it connected with UC or ulcerative colitis. I learned that I had complex PTSD and suffered chronic stress as a result. Complex PTSD is prolonged or repeated trauma and Dr. Bessel van der Kolk and the Trauma Foundation have done an incredible job researching the impact of complex PTSD and developmental trauma on our nervous systems. People often hear complex PTSD and think of really serious traumatic experiences like being in war, sexual abuse, physical abuse, etc. In addition to those traumatic experiences, research also finds that complex PTSD can result from not being met emotionally or attuned to as a child. And this can result in never learning how to regulate, but also it can result in just avoiding these feelings of sadness and grief altogether, which are a really imperative part of our human experience. Mm-hmm. And this holding on and not allowing these experiences to occur in our nervous systems and in our bodies can lead to physiological repercussions later on. Mm-hmm. In the book Belonging, Togepa Turner writes that most of us think of trauma as brought on by a physically or sexually violent event or series of events. But researchers are now discovering that there are many subtle, insidious forms of trauma that evoke the same set of responses in the body and the nervous system. Witnessing violence, chronic instability, or chaos in the childhood home, emotional neglect, and lack of secure attachment with your primary caregiver because they are chronically depressed, mentally ill, volatile, or emotionally unavailable, all of these things can create the conditions for emotional trauma in a young person. We are fundamentally changed by trauma at the cellular level. An author and anthropologist, Daniel Siff, writes that in response to experiencing overwhelming pain and fear, biological changes occur that leave our minds and bodies extremely sensitive to potential changes. We see threats where perhaps none exist, and we overreact to these imagined threats. And I say this so that people start maybe becoming aware of their responses to the world around them. But I also want to state that often we do know what's safe and what isn't. And so none of this should take away that sense of trusting ourselves and our experiences. But there is discernment and choice that comes from somatic work. For me, learning how to regulate my nervous system again and again and build the capacity to be in my body and feel all of my feelings without dissociating, my symptoms began to lessen and I ultimately ended up in remission. I still get symptoms and I'm not offering a one-size-fits-all solution. The difference for me after being a client in this work for a few years is that I'm able to come back to safety when I go into fight or flight. And studies in neuroscience show that we can rewire our brains, which is incredibly exciting. The vagus nerve is a craniosacral nerve connected to our brain, our heart, and our digestive system. And what I didn't understand before doing this work is that since my body was chronically stressed, I had to rewire my brain through embodied practices, not cognitive ones. And my body needed to send signals to my brain that I'm safe, not the other way around. Life happens in seasons and is going to be hard, and some things are going to be out of my control. I didn't used to have the capacity to tend to myself when life got hard, and instead I went into fight or flight or shutdown. I now have the capacity to come back to safety, the present moment, nervous system regulation again and again. And somatic coaching and therapy has enabled me with an opportunity to pause, regulate, and choose instead of operating on autopilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a powerful story of how you've come to this work and how it has helped you. And so I know that for some listeners, this is the first time they're hearing about somatic psychotherapy and acceptance and commitment therapy. And so I think we've already talked a little bit about how things are shifting. Things are always shifting mm-hmm. in medicine, sometimes not as fast as we would want them to. But I'm wondering if you could put some context around this and how mental health care for people with chronic illness is evolving, especially in recent years, and what you think it might look like going forward.
Yeah, so there are many training programs that mental health practitioners can take in addition to their master's in social work or mental health counseling that offer education surrounding trauma-informed care and somatic work. Unfortunately, there's a huge cost barrier for these trainings, and most schools don't offer quality somatic and trauma-informed education. So the good news is that the field is growing, the trainings are becoming more available, and IBD patients are really practiced at self-advocacy. So if there was ever a population to find quality care and find the right care, I'm very confident that IBD patients are a great population to pursue this. I really recommend exploring the Polyvagal Institute, the Somatic Experiencing website, and the Trauma Foundation, which again, we can include in the show notes, to find practitioners with integrity. It's a big word I use. And I trust every one of you listening to really feel that internally if someone is practicing with integrity. As the wellness industry grows, I've seen a lot of spiritual bypassing, which is when people use spiritual practices to avoid the underlying emotional experiences that need to be processed and met with care. When spiritual practices like meditation, prayer, and yoga are coupled with somatic coaching and therapy that support the underlying roots of nervous system dysregulation, I really believe this is when real transformation happens. So I recommend taking the 15-minute consult with coaches and therapists. I also offer a free 15-minute consult and noticing how you're feeling when talking to that practitioner. Somatic therapy and any trauma work should be very slow. It should not reharm you, and it shouldn't exceed your window of tolerance. If you're working with a practitioner that you feel like is overriding your boundaries, isn't gentle and kind with your experience, it's a sign that there's not safety there, and you may want to look for a more deeply trauma-informed practitioner. And being with someone safe, trauma-informed, and with a somatic lens has made all the difference for me. Part of what inspired me to go into this work is I really had trouble finding a practitioner with my lived experience of IBD and chronic illness that was also trauma-informed and was practiced with somatic work. And so I wanted to work with someone who had that lived experience. And I'm just so grateful that now I can provide that support to patients. As someone living with IBD, I was told so many times what to do to change and fix myself that so much of this work for me was relearning to trust myself and learn that there's actually nothing to fix. I just needed to tend to myself, move slower, and really be my own friend. I recommend that no matter what training or credentials a practitioner has, the most important thing is to trust your gut with whether it feels like a fit. And if you feel safe with that person, you know yourself best. I think when people think about therapy and they think of doing the work, quotation marks, it feels like this job, like an extra job. What I love about this work is it's gentle. I think everything should have a sense of humor, or at least for me, I need to have fun while doing this. And so some of it is really hard, but it also should be gentle and kind and slow. Like, this is a lifelong journey, right? And so I really hope that we can all find ways to be gentle with ourselves, try to find some humor and levity in all of it. People should not be processing trauma 100% of their day. It's just not healthy. And so I also want to recognize that as well. We discussed the theme of belonging a bit earlier and how isolating and lonely living with IBD can be. There's a beautiful book by Tokopah Turner that I highly recommend called Belonging, Remembering Ourselves Home. And it talks about how belonging is a set of skills that we can practice, not exactly a place. And there's a beautiful prayer that she offers at the beginning of the book. And I think it really resonates with somatic coaching, therapy, and living with and recovering from chronic illness. And so this is by Tokopah Turner. For the rebels and the misfits, the black sheep and the outsiders, for the refugees, the orphans, the scapegoats and the weirdos, for the uprooted, the abandoned, the shunned and invisible ones, may you recognize with increasing vividness that you know what you know. May you give up your allegiances to self-doubt, meekness, and hesitation. May you be willing to be unlikable, and in the process, be utterly loved. May you be impervious to the wrongful projections of others, and may you deliver your disagreements with precision and grace. May you see, with the consummate clarity of nature moving through you, that your voice is not only necessary, but desperately needed to sing us out of this muddle. May you feel shored up, supported, entwined, and reassured as you offer yourself and your gifts to the world. May you know for certain that even as you stand by yourself, you are not alone.
Avery, that's incredible. And thank you so much for sharing it with me and the listeners. As a writer, I love words, of course. And the way that this prayer was put together, I think really spoke to the experience of living with a chronic illness and the idea of feeling outside and feeling as though everyone else is having some experience of health, of belonging, that you are completely unable to access because you are living with not only a chronic illness, but also one that is extraordinarily stigmatized, frankly.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you so much. I can't think of a better way to end this episode, but I will just ask you to let everyone know where they can connect with you right now, because you do offer services to people that are living with chronic illness. And of course, you have other resources available. So how can people get in contact with you?
Yeah, so I'm not currently on social media, but you can find me on my website, www.healingwithabri.com. And Abri is A-B-R-I. It's a tough name. And you can reach me there through my contact form. My LinkedIn is Abri Bernstein. And we can also put my email on the show notes. And one more thing, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I do offer peer somatic coaching. So if people are interested or they want to explore this, I offer 15-minute free consult, and I also can try to move you in a different direction if that's what you are looking for. I'm trying to grow my network in this space and want to be able to support as many people as I can. And I just want to thank you so much for having me, for doing this, and these communities that you're creating, I feel like are the antidote to that aloneness or that loneliness that we discussed, and really creating that sense of belonging. So I'm really grateful also that you created this.
Thank you so much for saying that. That is certainly the intent. And I want to thank you for sharing your hard-won experience, because that is how we learn from one another and how we create and cultivate community and ultimately put people on the path to healing. So thank you so much, Abri. I really appreciate your time and experience.
Thank you.
Hey, super listener. Thanks to Abri Bernstein for connecting with me to help us all learn more about somatic therapy and the important work that she is doing in the chronic illness space. As Abri said, we are a community, and learning from one another is so important to prevent the loneliness and isolation that living with a stigmatized illness can bring. To that end, check the show notes for links to a written transcript, everyone's social media handles, and more information on the topics we discussed. You can also access all of that and more from my episode 150 page on aboutibd.com. Thanks for listening, and remember, until next time, I want you to know more about IBD. About IBD is a production of Mal and Tal Enterprises. It is written, produced, and directed by me, Amber Tresca. Mix and sound design is by Mac Cooney. Theme music is from Cooney Studio.